Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You guys looking good? How you feeling?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing all right. Daniel Lynch, Josh Stalmont, and we are all set up. What's it been like? Just being back? It's not ice cold, but it's
cold.
It's cold, I'm sure, from what you guys are used to. What's it been like getting back around the guys?
It's been great. Nice to be back in Kauffman and, you know, get to spend some time with some fans and see the guys, and yeah, it's just getting excited.
Yeah. Where are you at right now on your calendar to wind up, to get revved up for spring training,
Josh? Takeoff countdown? Yeah. We are DEFCON 2 days. So we'll be taking off here Monday. I live here full-time now, so we're excited for some warm weather.
How different is the off-season with the – I'm sure you guys just got done talking about this, but with the rule changes, with the pitch clock, how much did that dominate – your off season, Josh?
You know what? I don't think most of us actually care. And I say that with the kindest regard, because it's an understanding of, like, the game is going to change. Your goal as a professional athlete is to adjust as quick as you can. And that's to situations on the field, situations off the field, physical, mental stuff. So something that we change on the rule side is kind of like just adjust as fast as you can, kind of get there and just do it. And I think that's what a lot of these guys are doing, is like taking the hands-off approach, seeing how the game unfolds. You're going to make mistakes. It's going to happen. Hopefully you can learn from other teams that make them. There's going to be mistakes made. So it's just like one of those things, as the adjustments are happening, trying to make those mental mistakes as minimal as possible and continue to, you know, keep a clean game going.
One of those things that's going to take care of itself in spring training.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, I like to work fast anyway, so it's not – I think it'll probably affect relievers a little bit more, because it's more of a
– that's what,
like,
I've always thought.
Yeah, because it's more of a like a little more methodical maybe, and a little more time-taking, where I feel like the first five innings of the game, you're kind of just rolling.
Right.
You know, five, six, seven.
It's all about rhythm.
Right.
Well, what do I know? maybe it's all about rhythm coming out of the bullpen as well.
As you start to see your last at-bat come up, you take a little bit different approach sometimes. You know, if you get up in that first at-bat and –
yeah,
you know, the game's not on the line. It's not decided yet. There's no sway either way. Obviously, baseball's baseball. It's gonna, you know, change as the winds. But you know, realistically, like, as you start to get to that seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, you start to see a different approach, because if you're down by two, you're down by four, you have a different approach in the last at bat and that kind of mentality. And so I think you kind of have a little bit more importance, whether it's real or not, happening in those situations. And I mean, it's just going to slow the game down sometimes. Yeah. You got to think about it. You got to understand. You got to make their chest moves match your chest. So it's like, just kind of like a little game of cat and mouse.
Yeah. You know, I've always thought that, yeah, it was going to affect relievers the most, because you're, you know, got to, here it is. And you know. But the batters are doing the exact same thing, right? It's going to affect them late in the game the same way, because, like you're saying, they're going to step out a little bit more in the eighth and the ninth when that's the game, than they are in the first and the second.
Yeah. I mean, it's just going with the pace.
You know,
it's like, as that game speeds up, if the game's close, the game's on the line, like, there's a little bit more deep breath, there's a little bit more focus, that little intimidation factor, kind of understanding, you know, heartbeats a little quicker type situations, that you know, it's our job to slow the game down. Now the game is going to be slowed down. Actually, it's going to be it's going to have to speed up the process, and so there's going to be things that are cut out, whether it's stepping off, whether it's the rosin, whether it's figuring that stuff out. Sometimes when it's August here and we're all leaking and everybody's hurting, there's probably going to be some leniency, and that's going to be an understanding of the umpires too. And realizing that, like, when you try to speed a game up and it gets sloppy, it completely defeats the purpose of speeding that game up. So I think there's going to be a balance that, as this progresses and as you kind of understand it, it can't just constantly be this go, go, go thing, because you're going to have batters hurting, you're going to have pitchers hurting, and all of a sudden these games are going to expound rather than compound.
Yep.
So
no question. Josh Stalmont, Daniel Lynch joining us here on 610 Sports Radio. Daniel, tell me about your offseason. Yours was one of the, I would say, handful that I was excited about, because it was always present in the way that you spoke and in the way that you would converse with us in the media. Nearing the end of the season, you're going to attack this offseason. Yeah. What's it consisted of?
I've been really happy with it. I definitely feel like this has been my best offseason so far, just because I feel like after 2 years, you know, every year you kind of learn a little bit more what you need to do. Like, I remember at the end of last year being like, man, I know exactly what I need to do. And then I, you know, went through it this year. And I think I want to try to just keep doing the things that I was doing well, pick those things, and also, you know, be honest with myself about what I wasn't doing well. And so a lot of that was just like some pitch shaping stuff, some sort of working out my arsenal a little bit so that the pitches pair a little bit better together. And Sweeney and Bove and Stetter, the new staff, have been really great about helping me kind of understand what I want. And then, because I really wanted to be on the same page with them, because when you're doing things like that, it's a big commitment. And to have communication and be exactly on the same page when you get to spring training is huge, because then they know what you're trying to do. And it's not like, oh, I've been working on this pitch for 4 months, and then now all of a sudden they're like, you need to throw something else.
Yeah.
So
you say get on the same page with what you want. Can you expand on that as far as what you want?
I kind of just like, you know, I would give them the idea of what, you know, hey, I want the ideal pitch here would be this speed with this sort of break, or this and this. And then if I wanted it to make sure that they weren't like, oh, I completely disagree with that, or maybe we should go this route, because I just tend to work better when I feel like everything's moving in the same direction. And it's not like if I feel like a hint of like hesitancy on the coaches, like on their sides, kind of being like, I don't know really. Yeah. I just tend to work better that way.
Yeah.
So they were great communicating.
Josh, let me ask you about that coaching. When you've been around the bigs now as long as you have, did you get to a point in your career where not that you're ignoring people, but man, it's just coming from everywhere. As Daniel's talking, I can just think over the past few years, man, you must have had so many people going, here's what you need to do, here's what you... in your progression, how have you dealt with everyone having advice to fix whatever needs fixing?
It's such a unique dichotomy between like player and coach, and I don't think it'll ever change, because you have a guy that is supposed to impact the lives of, you know, 11 or 12 pitchers at a time, you know, 13, whatever it is. And every single time the player shows up to the field, they think that the coach is thinking of them first and foremost. And at most, you're one out of 13 thoughts. And so it's that understanding of, like, when you go into the situation, you have to understand, you know, empathetically understanding what they have and what their job is, and how you can positively impact your relationship with the pitching coach. And so as these new relationships develop, I better know my strengths and weaknesses before I come in, and I apply those to what they already see. So working together, you're not having somebody do 100% of the work and I'm just sitting there listening. I'm not doing 100% of the work and feel like I'm not getting listened to and there's no input. So it's like trying to find that 50-50 mesh. Maybe they're 70% and I'm 30% when it comes to numbers. Maybe it's like I can't tell, they can't tell me how I feel, so I'm going to be 100% in that category. But looks wise, I can't self-reflect very well. So as we kind of go through these new pitching coaches, and you see in the minor leagues a ton, like you have a coordinator, you have high A, double A, triple A, big leagues, and you have all these different eyes and sounds and ears, and everyone's telling you different stuff. And kind of like when you get to a new situation, like I'm sure you're kind of referencing here, is that being as open and honest as you can be with these guys is literally the only way that we can get on the same page day one and start with this new staff and take off. Because like, every single person here has a job. Their job is to win games, help us win. But if you're not trying to help each other, it's like the hardest way to go about things is expecting others to do things, and you're not picking up your end of the, you know, your end of the deal.
So you nodding over here?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really important to even use the example that I used is like for this offseason. If I hadn't, I don't think that it's the coach's job to come to you and be like, hey, you need to do this, that. Like, they might do that, but like Josh said, it's like, it's just not all about you.
Yeah.
It's only all about you to your, like, not really in that way, but more it's like, you're the only person that's going to really dive in 100% on your own thing, because other people just have other stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. The majority of us didn't pick the Royals, and right. And naturally you have to understand that, like, as we got here and we understood how we got here, usually a lot of us through college were kind of self-sufficient. You had to get to there, you had to do this stuff, and it was a lot of familial backing. and kind of as you went into the professional side, you kind of went into your own team mode where you have to understand that these guys are learning you just as much as you, and you kind of understand that you need to be able to fit the puzzle of this team as best as you can. That may not always align perfectly with you, but it's kind of like the mercenary idea that, like, if I'm hired by this organization to do my job, how's the best way that we can do this job, knowing that they wanted me in this role type thing?
How do you deal with like disagreements, and I don't know how often there are disagreements between the player and the coach, but I know I'm just, past few years, just always inundated with callers that say, you know, if this coach wasn't there, so-and-so would be so much better. And that might be true, but I've always thought, man, this is your career. If a coach is saying, don't do this, but you think you should do it, screw you, I'm doing it, because I'm out here fighting for my life.
It's not really my personality to do that. Like, I don't ever have disagreements, really. I think the ideal relationship between player and coach, like I was saying, is like what I was saying earlier about, like, you bring ideas to them. Mm-hmm. And then for me, at least, because I tend to have a lot of ideas, would be that I have enough trust in the coach and the coach feels strongly enough to go, that's a bad idea. And because I tend to overthink and want to change stuff. And so the ideal relationship for me would be – if he comes to me with something, I know it's in my best interest and it's well thought out. He's not making some, like, you know, like, quick decision to change something.
Being open to change is almost like a double-edged sword sometimes.
Right. Because a lot of times people will come and we do it to ourselves a lot, because you have a couple bad starts, and in this scope of the season, it's only two bad starts. Right. You don't want to, like, especially if you've been really good before, where you have to be – have a relationship, or ideally you'd have a relationship that was like, hey, I think I want to throw this slider, and just being like, you know what, your slider's really good, let's stick with it, but also feeling like, well, my slider's not really good, it's getting crushed,
right.
You know, that's just an example, but that would be ideal. And that's like Josh said, like, being open to change is kind of like, a lot of times the best guys are the ones that stick to what they want to do and just believe in it, and it just, and do it as long as it works.
I find it interesting, the, you know, listening to Zach yesterday talk about his off season and trying to get better at this or that. And, you know, Josh, I would think the internal battle of, I always want to get better, always want to evolve, but don't want to forget what made me a big leaguer and got me here.
Yeah. I mean, it's so easy to bring up all the terms that kind of float around this industry of, like, if it ain't fixed, if it ain't broke, don't fix it type thing. And so you go to an interesting category when you start talking about this stuff, because as our bodies adapt and evolve and change, there is nothing that I can go back and take my 20-year-old self and go back and do exactly how I did there, because I've actually changed things. I've adjusted things. I've diminished things, because, you know, as those bodies, like, physiologically change, there's adjustments. And, like, we talked about, this game is literally just adjustments and constant off-season maintenance. And there's some things I did this off-season that I regret, not necessarily today, but maybe in 6 months. But I can't apply that to myself today. The dramatic irony at ideals of, like, knowing something that I didn't know at the time. So it's like going forward with this open-ended approach to change, allowing the people around you to trust them wholeheartedly. Because, like, when we're out here in grinding, I need somebody that, I don't care whether it's going to hurt my feelings or not, I have to be perceptible to what they tell me, apply that, and truly believe it when I go on that field. Because, like, if I don't, it doesn't work. And it's an understanding of, like, you can't fake it. And that's a big part of it.
I'm listening to, was it MLB Network, one of those, and they were talking about Greinke, and they're saying that's why he's so appreciated in clubhouses, is because it's the truth, and it comes from a good place, and whether you want to hear the truth or not, that's what he's giving you.
Yeah, I was talking to Yarbrough about this last night, actually, but it always bothers me, because what's put out is, like, Zach saying something that's comes off overtly negative.
Yeah.
But a lot of times that, like, dead honest truth is completely the opposite. Like, I can remember I pitched against Chicago last year, and I think I gave up, like, I went, like, 4 1/3 and gave up 3 runs. And I kind of, like, just wanted to hear Zach's thoughts, and I was like, man, I was awful today. And he was like, well, I mean, he's like, yeah, you were awful, but you only gave up three, if you're awful and you only give up 3 runs and 4 1/3, like, that's pretty good.
Agreed.
And so that, like, that doesn't get out there as much, but there's a ton of that where it's, like, very positive, and he kind of everything is the truth. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's a negative or a positive, he's going to tell you.
Yeah. Talking with Bobby earlier, he was saying, you know, in April he was putting a lot of pressure on himself. You know, team hadn't won a lot. He was supposed to be the guy, so mm-hmm. Did either one of you guys feel that over the course of, you know, last season when, you know, inside the clubhouse, it at times felt tense. The wins aren't piling up out there. Daniel, when you're taking the hill, how did you or did you fall victim to the I got to fix it all?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I felt like, one, like I put the most pressure on myself. There's not – so that was – a burden because I'm like, I'm not doing what I know I'm capable of. And I can't really figure out why, which was really frustrating because I just didn't feel like I couldn't figure out why. Cause I felt like I was putting in good work and I was going out there and I was like pitching a lot of innings in my starts, but it was a lot of times at the very end, they just turn around. And I'm like, God, why is this happening? Right. And that I definitely pressed because I'm like, I'm not going deep enough into, I wanted to be the, you know, I was watching Brady go out there and do it every time. And that was like, you know, I'm like, well, you know, the team needs me to do that too. So I would get, you know, frustrated. I could be in the fourth inning and have be at 82 pitches or something. And I'm like, God, I got to find a way to get through the sixth. And that just takes you out of the present. Mm-hmm. And that completely takes you out of like,
you had starts where you did grind.
Right.
Did that thought not pop up in those starts when you did find yourself, all right, I got to put my head down and give him six?
Yeah, I can remember against Oakland, I threw a lot of pitches in the beginning of the game, and I just was like, I'm just going to throw every pitch right down the middle.
Yeah, right.
Because I'm like, this is the only way they need me to – because a lot of times you know the bullpen short or something. That plays a factor because you're like, mm-hmm. they need me to go six innings today.
Right.
And so, yeah, absolutely. And also just being like the, you know, coming in with a lot of – all of us coming in with sure. a lot of expectations and mm-hmm. – it doesn't happen overnight for a lot of people. So it's, you know, as a competitor, you want it all right now. And I know the fans want it all right now and the coaches and everything, but you know, sometimes you got to be patient and be realistic with yourself.
Josh, I mentioned that clubhouse. Was it, Zach said it was some of the most fun he's had in his career. He's been around for 20 years. So that speaks positively about the people in that clubhouse. Better, worse, the same as the Royals clubhouses you've been a part of previously?
You know, it's super interesting to start comparing those dynamics because you yourself are looking at it from a different perspective. And I think, like, that's the hardest part is, like, if I look at it from my perspective of last year where I didn't feel like I was doing my part in the second half. I am from an injured standpoint. You know, it's like that perception's always going to taint what it is. And so you kind of have to take a step back and, you know, remove those biases from whatever it is. So if you're being successful yet the team isn't, it's really hard for some guys to separate themselves from actually what's going on with themselves and be, like you said, be present and understand that, like, the team may be going through a really tough stretch, but you're just nails.
Yeah.
And it's all rainbows and butterflies. And, like, the vice versa goes. The team could be actually playing really well, and you're going through a tough stretch, and you're the, you know, you're the one in the corner kind of kicking the dirt
right.
when the team's winning. And mm-hmm. understanding that dynamic and separating yourself. And, like, I use this all the time, and I say, there's player Josh and then there's human Josh. When the jersey's on and I'm on the field, I'm part of the team, I do everything. And then there's a human side of me that's going to deal with whatever else happens with the job and the outcomes of that. And kind of being able to separate those and know that, like, when I'm on the field, the only thing is winning competition and giving everything I got. So it's like, if I give 100% every single day with a positive attitude, I get to close the book on player Josh every single day with a good outlook because I don't have to sit there and worry about giving 2% more, doing anything harder. Human Josh gets to deal with whatever it is when I get to home and deal with the actual stuff that comes with being, you know, a person and on this field. Like, we don't go in a box and they close the door. And then the next day they open it back up and say, hey, you get to go play now. Like, you know, I got family, dogs, everything's got, is still going on outside the scene. So, you know, kind of knowing that and applying that to that clubhouse aspect, I think is the hardest thing to do. But I mean, this is a young team. They're comfortable with each other, which is, you know, a lot of times had good and negative approaches to the word comfort. You get too comfortable, that's going to be a negative thing. But if you're very comfortable, a lot of times it's easy to just go out and do what you're told because there's no external pressure and stuff like that. So this is a fun clubhouse, and I do agree with Zach.
Well, player Josh and human Josh both had to deal with injury and COVID a lot over the past few years. Did that ever rip any joy of this game from you?
It's, it's a learning experience. And I think, like I said, there's player Josh and there's human Josh, but there's also two different things of passion and profession. And as those kind of get blended together, because when you leave college, your passion starts to blend into this profession and it's a job. It's no longer this kind of, you know, wisp of whatever. Like you're on the trails of your dream and your goal is to chase it. And just like many dreams, you have no clue what's going to happen around the next corner type thing. So as you kind of go about this and as you go down that rabbit trail, you know, understanding that like the passion and profession balance and the emotion that I have on the field and the emotion I take off the field, you really have to draw the line in the sand, because I'm not going to take anything I have on the field home to my wife. She doesn't deserve that. She doesn't have anything like that. So it's like, I have to be very, very cognizant of understanding, you know, the separations. When I'm not feeling good and I'm hurt on the field and I'm performing as such, I'm given 100%. Maybe my 100% is not good enough to get a big league hitter out. And understanding that and actually being able to kind of apply that to my, you know, actual life is so much harder than, you know, it is to put on paper and, and actively enjoy that and separate those so that I can still be, you know, present, like you mentioned, and still be there in the clubhouse, outside of the clubhouse, regardless of my performance, just to continue that, you know, snowball rolling. So you're not going to stop that momentum.
Are you able to leave it at the ballpark, or does the wife hear it every once in a while?
I don't talk about it, but I mean, my wife, we've been together forever, since high school, so she knows.
Oh yeah, she can.
She can sense it, and then it's really hard for me. I've gotten a ton better at it. Because I actually find that I'm better if I used to think that I could figure everything out.
Didn't we all? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it was like, I thought that I could just like sit and think about something and figure it out. Whereas like sometimes it's just best to leave. It's really hard, but, and I've gotten so much better. But like, yeah, Millie knows if she can sense if I'm feeling a certain way. And she'll be like, do you want to talk about it or no? And usually it's no, but I try not to. And I think this year will be better, because I think like thinking about what Josh said about if you just go and do your job the best you can, that's all you can do. And I think doing my job, the perception of it has changed a lot from playing with guys like Mike Minor and Wade Davis and them talking to me about, because I'd be like, man, you know, I went six innings and gave up four or something. And they're always like, you know, like those guys, like that's part of the job too. Like you're not going to go seven innings and punch out 12 every time, but if you can take, even if it's five runs and you grind for six innings, I think changing the perception of I'm going to expect to go out and go seven innings and punch out 12 when I go out there. But if I give up three in the first, it's not, you can't think about, oh, my start's ruined because it's not seven innings. Now it's like, all right, I need to make it through six innings.
Right. Next pitch.
Right. You know, and it makes it easier to like put, like go home at night and be like, you know what? I didn't, or maybe I threw 40 pitches in the first inning and I only got through four and a third, but at least I did more than was expected in that certain situation. And that helps me for sure.
Daniel Lynch, Josh Stallman, Crafty's giving me the eye. I've got to let you guys go. Appreciate you swinging by. Enjoy the rest of
absolutely
Royals Rally 2023. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Claudia. Have a good one.
When the stakes rise and the lights get bright, that's when you find out who can really swim. Deep Waters is a new UFC podcast from CBS Sports. Every Monday, myself, Dean Thomas, alongside with legends of the sport, Chris Weidman, Jorge Masvidal, and Dustin Poirier, bring you inside the octagon like no one else can. Deep Waters, new episodes every Monday. Watch on YouTube or listen on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get podcasts.